Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everybody. I'm so glad that you did not embarrass Denver by not showing up because of the snow when Anne is here from Norway. So we're so glad you joined us this evening to welcome her and to hear about her latest book, which is right away available in the States, which we're happy about. Anne was a journalist and a news commentator, I believe, and a lawyer, and worked in the police department and then was Minister of Justice in Norway. So she's certainly comes with great credentials to write mysteries. This one, I have to tell you, I'm immersed in Harry Belafonte's biography. Well, I started reading this, and you know, so Harry's on hold. So let's welcome here and hear about this exciting book.
Thank you very much. Thank you for struggling your way through this terrible blizzard of snow and weather. This is what we call nice weather in Norway, at least at this time of year. And the book, 1222, well, if you read that, you can see or read about how a real blizzard, a real snow blizzard, is really like. But I'm sorry that I have to disappoint you. I'm not going to talk about this book. First and foremost, because I hate talking about books. Books, for me, are things to read. For me, books are a book is a meeting between the book and the reader. The author doesn't have anything to do with that, because you have to interpret it your way. And I would really like you to read it. And when I have my little question, probably afterwards, question section, you feel free to ask about the book. And I'll try to say something reasonably wise about it. But what I would like to talk about tonight is the popularity of crime fiction and why it is such a worldwide, very, very popular genre. That's much more interesting. And on that matter, I am so wise that you cannot go to any source and read the same things. This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience for you. Listen to my wisdom. Quantity-wise, crime fiction is the world's most read genre. You have to excuse my English. It's kind of getting rusty. I used to speak it fluently, but if I pronounce or mispronounce things, bear over with me. Quantity-wise, crime fiction is the number one genre in the world, all over the world. I can also, as a digression, I could say that the phenomenal Harry Potter series is not a science fiction or a fantasy or a children book series. It's one of the best crime fiction series that has ever been written. But we won't have to discuss that. The privilege of standing here is that I don't have to discuss anything with you. Why, you might ask, this phenomenal, tremendous popularity? The crime fiction's epic character, even in periods where other fiction has been in more introverted and exploratory style periods, is one of the reasons, I'm sure. I don't know American literature that well, even though I try to read a lot of American literature, but in Norway and also in the rest of Europe, in the 80s, end of the 70s, all the 80s, all the 90s, and quite some years into the 2000s, literature was becoming more and more introvert. more and more boring, in other words. But the one genre that took the epic story and took care of the epic story and gave the audience and the readers the epic story was the crime fiction. And crime fiction has never stood so strong as it did after all those years of non-epic literature. Because humans have always craved stories, apparently as far back as our own existence beginning. The story became long, long, long before writing. And the need for a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, is almost as basic, I dare say, as the need of food and sleep and drink. The crime novel is epic in its character, and that is one of the main reasons why it's so popular. How the crime novel deals with the large, almost biblical issues probably also has a role in it. When you boil it down, the crime novel is about life and death, punishment and revenge, remorse and forgiveness, the eternal questions of humanity. I think that we need to read about this. We want to read about this, and we enjoy to read about this. I also believe that the main formula of crime literature has an impact on its popularity. Many have spent a lot of time to prove and explore this formula, or rather these formulas, because there are several. But the simplest of them, in my opinion, is the best one. And the formula that I will give to you now, you can try to write when you have this formula, is, in three words, it's order, chaos, order. And this formula, order, chaos, order, is the formula of so much literature. But the one genre beside the crime genre that really, really, really is based on this formula is children's literature. Children's literature almost always use this formula. If not all crime stories end well, they at least end with the reader in a way, or at least to some extent, can settle down with some kind of solution. And I claim that this is also a feature of the children's literature. And who has not sat with a child and told a thrilling story with a clear, albeit unspoken, agreement with a child? All goes well in the end. Only the night before I came to the United States, Friday night, I was letting my 9-year-old daughter go to bed. She was, of course, not sleeping when I went to bed. And she said, "Can I sleep with you guys since it's your last night at home?" And I said, "Okay." And they always have some kind of excuse, you know. And when she was there, and I wanted to sleep because I was going up the next morning very early to come to New York. And she said, "You have to tell me a ghost story." And I said, "Well, it's 11 o'clock. It's not a very good time for a ghost story, is it?" And she says, "Yeah, but you can tell me a ghost story. We all know that ghosts don't exist." And I said, "Well, what's the point with a story then?" And she said, "Because it's scary and it always ends well." And I think that this contract is the same type of contract that I make with my readers, not only with my 9-year-old daughter. And I'm very far from being a literary scholar, but I dare claim that this order, chaos, order formula is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, recipe of a good story. By the way, I can tell you that a lot of my Scandinavian colleagues, and there are a lot of us, and we are getting more and more popular in the rest of the world, they are so upset when I say this, because they refuse to be compared to children's literature. And I always say that this must mean that they do not have sufficient respect for children's literature. Now I have shared with you the main reasons, what I feel is the main reason, are the main reasons for the genre's popularity. I will try to say something about its relationship to the society around it, because that is maybe one of the areas where the wave, we might call it a wave, the wave of Scandinavian crime literature, gets its a speciality of Scandinavian literature. Crime literature will always be in any society about the society's dark side. It goes without saying. It's about crime. It's about this society's very dark side. Crime literature has attempted to be defined since its origin. Crime literature is not very old. Very many means that Edgar Allan Poe wrote the first crime novel in 1851, I think it was, with the murders in Morgerud. Yeah, that's wrong. The first crime novel was written by a Norwegian 2 years earlier, and this is a fact. And it might have been, because Edgar Allan Poe could read German, and this Norwegian guy called Maurits Hansen, who wrote a novel very, very similar to the Poe novel, 3 years ahead of him, 2 or 3 years ahead of him. And it was immediately translated to German. So it might be that Edgar Allan Poe actually had read this book before he wrote his one and only book that, not his one and only book, but his one book that later has been claimed being the first crime fiction story, which is was not. Of course, it was a Norwegian. The simplest definition of crime, of a crime story, is, in my opinion, the best one. It's a detective story about a crime and the tentative investigation of it. I ask you to take notice that such definition is emphasized by two factors, the crime and the investigation. That's how we restrict ourselves from those stupid debates on whether or not people like Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote crime fiction. I don't know if you have those discussions here, but in Europe, they discuss all the time. That, they take all these great, great authors from, well, from the Bible, which someone claims, well, it's the biggest crime novel in all times, which is BS, in my opinion. And to, did Fyodor Dostoevsky really write crime novels? Of course he didn't write crime novels. It's stupid to say that Dostoevsky ever, ever wrote a crime novel. He wrote novels with some murders in them. But the, if a book could be called, should be called a crime novel, the murder or the crime is the motor of the story, but the investigation is what makes it exciting and readable. And Dostoevsky didn't want to say anything about murders or investigations. He wanted to say something about the human inner soul, which, of course, some crime novel writers also try to do, but we're not as good at it. A detective novel should, among many other things, be suspenseful. That is one of the criteria. It should captivate the reader. That way, it goes almost without saying that the crime itself should be of a nature that the reader will care about. The crime must be serious. It must be something that upsets the reader. Simply a crime that the reader wants to be solved. That is why the Western detective novel almost always is about the capital crime, the murder. Sometimes combined, of course, with the sexual crime, with crimes for profit, or other criminal acts. But to capture the reader into a story about crime he or she actually doesn't want solved, well, it's not a good idea. The reader must generally take the researcher's or the investigator's party, at least to the extent that they want the crime solved. And the opposite actually happens in the stories dealing exclusively with a coup. Both in literature and especially in the world of film, we find many examples of stories of pure theft. What when usually happens that then is that the table turns and we root for the offender. I tried once to write a crime novel about a coup, a big attack at the Norwegian Central Bank. I had a very good idea, but when I had written 50 pages or so, I felt so allied with the perpetrators. And I noticed that I was trying to maneuver the whole story so that they would actually pull this off. And that was kind of demoralizing, so I just shoved it away. Despite the fact that the Western world is characterized by a strong protection of private property, there is something fascinating in stealing. We have to, maybe a little bit reluctantly, admire if someone really managed to pull off a big coup. In the very popular Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I can tell you that the original title on that book is Men Who Hates Women. Not a very sellable title in America, I guess, but a very sellable title in Europe. The author, he lets Lisbeth Salander in the end of the first book. Lisbeth Salander is kind of a modesty blaze on speed or something. She's a very cartoon type of character, and she has been the victim of very cartoon type of crime. I mean, I've worked in the vice department of Oslo Police Department for many years, and I've been in the law. I've been a lawyer for many years. I've been a journalist for many years, and I have worked a lot with sexual offenses. And what Stieg Larsson is writing about in this series has never taken place anywhere, any place in any corner of the world, but it's fascinating reading. And he's very unbelievable, but he manages to write a story without any restrictions. And in the end, I don't know if you have read the book, but in the end, Lisbeth Salander, she is a great hacker, right? And she's not only a great hacker, I mean, she's a phenomenal hacker. She is a better hacker than any hacker in the world, any time. And there are never, ever going to be a greater hacker than Lisbeth Salander. And when she sits in the end, hacking into some kind of a bank account in Switzerland or wherever it is, if I should write a scene like that, I might let her run away with maybe $5 million. Ooh, yeah, but isn't that too much? No, okay, let's her take we'll let her take $5 million. And another male colleague, for instance, Joel Nesbø, or as you say, Joe Nesbø. His name is Joel Nesbø. But as you guys say, he would maybe, because he's so much cooler than me, so he would say, oh, I'll let her take $50 million. Ooh, $50 million is a lot of money. But what Stieg Larsson does, lets her steal $5 billion or something. I mean, he lets her steal so much money that she will never, ever, ever have any problem solving anything, wherever, because she will always have the cash to do it. It's ingenious. And when she does that, we don't sit there, wow, this is bad, thou shalt not steal, or whatever it says. We say, yeah, go, Lisbeth, steal some more money. And in films like The Thomas Crown Affair and The Fairly New The Tourist with Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp, the author lets the viewers sit through the whole story with an intense hope that the criminals goes free. So, crime fiction, no good idea if you don't have a murder or two or three. There is an easy conclusion to draw from this. The seventh commandment, thou shalt not steal, is far from as implemented in the world's population as the fifth, thou shalt not kill. Overall, if we read the Ten Commandments, we see that many of us would agree that several of them are good rules to live by, whatever you believe in. yet almost many of us have violated maybe 9 of them. Very, very few, however, violate the 5th commandment. You shall not murder. If you do, you should be punished. In every case, almost as a rule, both in literature as well as in real life. Being interviewed and traveling around the world, I almost always get the same question wherever I go. What is the reason why so much good crime fiction is written in Sweden and Norway, two beautiful, rich countries with extensive welfare and little to none poverty? First of all, I have to emphasize the fact that we Norwegians are much richer than the Swedes. Much. We have the oil. They only have Volvo. And that doesn't go so good either. European car industry is kind of going down the drain, as the American. Obviously, I can't answer such a question. I simply do not know why. But I have a couple of theories. One of them is the following. The thesis about the adequacy of benefits and that fair distribution of them combats crime is true only to a certain extent. This is, of course, important to do that. I'm a sincere supporter of the distribution policy. However, it is highly thought-provoking that societies like the Norwegian, where you basically have all the opportunities in the world of education, welfare, and happiness, have crime statistics not to be very proud of. There live about as many inhabitants in Boston, Massachusetts, as it does in Norway. Still, it is only about twice as many murders in Boston as in Norway. This despite the fact that Boston is struggling with completely different poverty and urban issues than small rural Norway does, where the largest town only has 600,000 inhabitants. And I deliberately called it a town, not a city. Why is it so? I think crime fiction of today gives us part of the answer. The murder and the crime are far more about the emotion than the purpose of gain. What roughly characterizes the Norwegian-Swedish crime fiction of today is the transition from the classic whodunit history or whodunit story to the story of why the hell did this happen? That's the recipe for the modern Norwegian-Swedish detective story. And you're probably making note of me saying the Norwegian-Swedish instead of the Scandinavian. And that is because there are no living Danes who knows how to write a crime novel. Denmark has kind of just been put into this Scandinavian thing. They don't deserve it. The subject that the author are really working with when we write crime fiction in Norway and Sweden is this. Why did this happen? And many other countries have had writers doing that and asking that questions. I mean, even mainstream crime writers from the US and the UK, for example, have for decades written books about the tragic emotional histories that leads to murder. The special thing about the Swedish-Norwegian version and what makes it so interesting for the rest of the world is probably the fact that the action in our books takes place in a society more egalitarian than any other and where the streets are flowing with milk and honey. At least if we compare ourselves to the rest of the world, this is the way we have our lives are. In many ways, it can be said we are cultivating the emotional motive, the capital crime carried out in a country where all the classical parameters are that it is not necessary to kill, makes it more interesting than usual. It is impossible for me, I'm getting up to a close here, but it is impossible for me as a Norwegian to stand here today, barely 6 months after the serious terrorist attack on Norwegian soil without saying anything about July the 22nd. this date where first the governmental quarter was blown up, and afterwards they had this terrible attack on the youth summer camp right outside of Oslo, will be very important to the Norwegian literature in the future, just as 9/11 has and still is important in American literature. The big Utøya novel will probably come. I doubt very much that a crime writer will write it. It will do poorly as a crime mystery event. The offender was taken in flagrante. He is in jail, and he will remain there or in a hospital, probably the rest of his life. That is poor material for a crime story. The investigation is obviously extensive, but not very interesting for crime literature. Fortunately, I might add. The biggest impact that this tragic terrorist act will have on the Norwegian crime writers is that the incident shows that there is no longer a limit to evil, even in this small, little, rich, quiet country of the north of Europe. Time will have to show what this will mean for literature. The most immediate problem we face, and this I have discussed with several of my Norwegian colleagues, what do we do with July 22nd right now? The vast majority of Norwegian crime writers write stories very close to real life. Our stories, and certainly mine, make use of authentic events to create credibility to the story. But the terrorist attack on July 22nd is still too close to us that we in no way can make use of it yet. So what do we do? Well, I don't know what the others will do. Me, myself, I faced a huge dilemma. I was well underway with a story about child abuse when the terrorist attack struck us. The plot in my script is played out in the summer fall of 2011 in the Oslo area. I couldn't pretend, of course, that nothing had happened, because something happened. Something did happen. But I could not use the terrorist act as a driving force in my book either. I finally found out how I would combine these two seemingly contradictory objectives. In about a year or two, you will decide whether I managed to or not. I won't reveal anything. The idea is so good that I don't dare to risk literary theft here. So I hope that you have had some nice 25 minutes. I will thank you for struggling through the snowstorm and coming here. Thank you very much, everybody.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.